They're touring with their latest release, Gnomes and Badgers. More information about Carl Denson's Tiny Universe at the Dakota is available at dakotacooks.com.
I just found out I'm listening to Fresh Air Community Radio. That's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And online at kfai.org. And so are you.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a daily newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota.
Today, a racial incident in Rochester earlier this year is still prompting new criminal charges. Then, how hunters are helping to stock Minnesota's food shelves. And Blue Cross Blue Shield customers in northern Minnesota are breathing a sigh of relief. I'm Gracie J. A South Carolina man is facing felony charges after threatening to travel to Minnesota and murder everyone involved with bringing criminal charges against Shiloh Hendricks. You may remember a viral video of Shiloh Hendricks yelling racial slurs at a young child at a Rochester park earlier this year. After the Rochester city attorney announced criminal charges against Hendricks, a 25-year-old from South Carolina started calling the city attorney's office, leaving threatening messages. He's now charged with a felony count of threatening violence and two gross misdemeanor counts of harassment. He is due in court next May. Up next, families seeking food assistance this holiday season may find venison at their local food shelf. Reporter Maya Hecht explains why.
This holiday season, Minnesotans seeking food assistance may be able to bring home venison.
We know everything is going up. You know, groceries are getting very high. Utilities are increasing.
Pat Zimmerman directs Piers Food Shelf, serving Morrison County.
This year has been record numbers. We used to average probably a year ago, 80, 90 families a month come through the door. In November, I just finished the paperwork. We had 145 families that used our services.
Here's is one food shelf of many across Minnesota that receives venison through a Minnesota Department of Agriculture donation program.
This venison, it really makes a difference for what I have to purchase.
Venison is donated by Minnesota hunters who bring their deer to participating processors around the state.
It's made into whole muscle cuts or ground venison, and then it is x-rayed for potential lead.
Jennifer Steffs is a dairy and meat inspector for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, or MDA.
And then it is distributed to food shelves in time for the holidays.
This doesn't come at a cost to participating meat processors, who are eligible for reimbursement through the MDA if they follow sanitation and labeling guidelines.
For the venison donation program, a processor that's registered and licensed would have to accept whole carcass deer.
Whole carcass donations ensure that deer are able to be tested for chronic wasting disease, which is increasing in prevalence in Minnesota, before processing to avoid cross-contamination.
If someone was looking to donate deer, we do maintain a list of registered processors and include the hunting zone.
That list is available to hunters on the MDA's website.
I think especially now there's definitely a need for good sources of protein.
We've been really seeing an uptick in families, and our budget is never enough.
At Piers Food Shelf, Pat isn't alone. Last year, state statistics reported record-breaking food shelf visits across Minnesota, in a trend that has been increasing since 2021.
You know, it used to be they were embarrassed. They were ashamed that they needed to access free food. But no, there's no shame in it.
Families can contact their local food shelf to find out if venison donations are available near you.
You know, we're a small town and we do serve, you know, the surrounding area, but we do not turn anybody away. We welcome anybody, and we're very happy to be able to help them.
Maya Hecht for North Star Stories.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Blue Cross Blue Shield customers with healthcare providers in the Aspire St. Luke's system no longer have to worry about finding a new provider or paying higher rates for out-of-network coverage. The current agreement between Blue Cross and the healthcare network was set to expire at the end of the year. That would have meant providers in the Aspire St. Luke's system would no longer be in-network, resulting in significantly higher healthcare costs for patients. The two parties were able to hammer out a new agreement that goes through the end of 2027.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
If you live in Maurer County, there's a good chance you're the victim of a data breach. Then, how the sun might be able to help Minnesota farmers sell more at their roadside stands. And the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources gains significant ground. I'm Chantel Sings. Maurer County in southern Minnesota, home to Hormel and Spam, says the majority of its residents were impacted by a data breach. The county says more than 60% of its residents were impacted by the cyber intrusion. Hackers accessed social security numbers, financial account information, fingerprint images, and more. While the incident happened back in June and the county has been providing updates, officials recently announced they do not have contact information for everyone who was impacted. There's more information about the breach on the Maurer County website. If you've ever driven around Greater Minnesota, you've probably passed a farm stand. They are usually simple structures, often on the side of the road. But, as Britt Ahmet tells us, the University of Minnesota is helping farmers upgrade those stands with a little help from the sun.
Could the future of agriculture include solar-powered farm stands? That's a question the University of Minnesota is exploring this winter.
To be honest, we're still in the kind of information gathering stage.
Daniel Handine is a research fellow with the university's Center for Sustainable Building Research. He's part of a team that's surveying farmers to see whether sales from farm stands could increase with the addition of features like coolers, lights, and payment and security systems, all powered by the sun.
Using the benefits of modern technology to make things simpler, we're trying to incorporate kind of smart features, tools like, you know, auto payment systems or remote payment systems. We can incorporate things like solar power, so we don't necessarily have to run power out to the farm stand to be able to run things like lights and hopefully coolers. And yes, then the last part is to be able to incorporate high efficiency cooling equipment.
Among the many ways farmers sell their products, farm stands have a relatively low barrier to entry. Picture a table heaped with produce at the end of a driveway.
The best farm stand is one that's really, really full.
Ryan Pesch has been farming vegetables for 25 years.
If you just had a farm stand with only two tomatoes on there and one potato, you wouldn't come back.
Ryan was a consultant on the farm stand project before retiring earlier this year. Now he farms full-time and runs his grocery store in Pelican Rapids. He says a solar-powered cooler could increase the number of customers.
But if you have a very, very full farm stand that has a lot of abundance, including, you know, a mix of products that are in a cooler, wow, that's going to have sort of a more of a wow factor that people are attracted to and they're going to come back again and again for.
I think what's different about this particular project is that it is intended to be, well, first and foremost, accessible.
Daniel Handine again. He says building plans for the solar-powered farm stand will be freely available to download from the University of Minnesota's website.
You can find plans from the 1930s, 40s, and 50s that are really, really fun to check out. That extension put out back in those days, you know, and it's everything from a farm stand to, you know, a poultry house to a dairy barn to a milking barn, you know, all these different plans were there. So it really is kind of part of the university system and the land grant university system.
That means farmers will be able to pick and choose which features make the most sense for their business.
You can essentially be able to build the building yourself. So buildable either by the farmer or operator that's going to be using it for sales, or alternatively have it simple enough that a kit can be built and, you know, it can be constructed relatively quickly.
For North Star Stories, I'm Britt Ahmet.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, or DNR, has permanently protected 16,000 acres of land in northern Minnesota. It's the agency's largest acquisition in recent history. As a result, the land, which spans 10 counties, will remain forested for habitat, hunting, and other outdoor recreational activities. Funds from the Minnesota Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment help to fund the purchase. The newly acquired state public land belongs to all Minnesotans.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
How sexually explicit emails were sent from a Rochester public school to students and staff. Then, a Minnesota organization is training citizens to legally and peacefully ensure federal agents abide by the Constitution. And those without a home have new help in southern Minnesota. I'm Gracie J. Students and staff with the Rochester Public Schools received sexually explicit and threatening emails earlier this month. According to several media sources in the Rochester area, the district says students accessed an email distribution list allowing them to send out the unauthorized email. The inappropriate message went to a large number of students of all grade levels. The district says it has identified the students responsible for creating and forwarding the messages and that those students are facing disciplinary action. The district also says it has taken steps to prevent it from happening again. Well, as you may have heard and seen, Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE officers, are making significantly more arrests in Minnesota. Many are questioning whether ICE agents are abiding by the Constitution. Reporter Catherine DeSalle tells us about a Minnesota organization training residents around the Midwest on how to legally ensure the Constitution is being upheld.
What we train is legal constitutional ways to uphold people's rights. And that includes whipping out your phone, documenting, being loud, asking questions, but following this practice that is called civil initiative, which is the idea that we know the lines of the law, we're going to follow them, and we're actually going to work to uphold the law and the Constitution.
That's Ryan Perez, leadership and organizing director with COPAL, Communities Organizing Latine Power and Action, a Minnesota-based organization. Among many programs, COPAL trains people about their constitutional rights when interacting with law enforcement.
The right to open the door or not open the door, what a warrant looks like.
This summer, COPAL began getting more requests from immigrant residents asking for trainings on civil rights if stopped by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE.
And we saw more and more allies saying, I want to know this information so I can protect my neighbor. And I want to be able to help my cousin know their rights. And if I see something on my block. And as a response, we began developing this curriculum that we call Constitutional Observers.
COPAL's Constitutional Observer Program trains community members to safely and legally document what law enforcement is doing and report back if any civil rights are being violated.
So observers get their handbook. They get training that is between an hour and a half, and they get a lanyard with an ID that labels them as a constitutional observer as well.
Ryan says the constitutional observer method combines two approaches. One, the legal observer who records but stays quiet, and two, the protester who is vocal but may lack legal training.
So you'll have people trained that are seeing enforcement that are yelling and asking for a badge number, asking for a warrant, and it's their constitutional right to do that.
When a constitutional observer reports seeing an individual's rights violated, COPAL shares that information with legal partners.
It's up to lawyers in the courts to decide if the law was violated or due process was violated.
In November, St. Paul police officers responded to a scene on St. Paul's east side where protesters gathered after ICE agents raided a local residence. In a press conference, St. Paul Police Chief Axel Henry had this to say about the incident.
To be very clear, the St. Paul Police Department is committed to supporting people's First Amendment rights, and we also encourage our residents to monitor these events. Whether you want to come and watch or you want to videotape them for yourselves to ensure that everything is happening in a lawful fashion.
For North Star Stories, I'm Catherine DeSalle.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The city of Winona is giving Catholic Charities of Southern Minnesota permission to operate an overnight shelter in the basement of Wesley United Methodist Church. According to the Winona Post, the city is allowing the organization to operate a temporary shelter after rejecting its request last month to operate a permanent shelter at a different location. Catholic Charities has been searching for a permanent overnight winter shelter since outgrowing its space last year. The permit allows up to 20 people to stay from 8 at night until 8 in the morning.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Residents of a small town in southern Minnesota are trying to officially wipe the city off the map. Then, another chance for clemency for community organizer and other Minnesotans waiting to hear about their cases, and how you can keep your eye out for eagles from the comfort of your own home. I'm Chantel Sings. If some residents of Twin Lakes in southern Minnesota get their way, the city will soon cease to exist. 34 voters signed a petition to dissolve the city, which has about 130 residents. Those looking to dissolve the city say its leaders have been violating open meeting laws, refuse to answer public data requests, and say three of the city council members are related. A judge has set a hearing for the case on January 7th. Interested parties can attend the hearing in person or online. If approved, the next step would be a special election for voters to decide if the city should dissolve. In today's main story, the Board of Pardons will convene tomorrow to hear cases from Minnesotans who applied for clemency. As Emily Krumberger tells us, community organizer and Hamline University adjunct professor Jason Soule is hoping he will be pardoned after being denied a hearing in September.
I got lawyers watching it. I got people who care about me watching it. But it's a lot of people that slip through the cracks.
Community organizer and Hamline University adjunct professor Jason Soule has been closely following his email and mail since August 1st, when the state's Clemency Review Commission voted unanimously in front of a packed room of supporters and 138 people on Zoom to recommend him for a pardon. But the Board of Pardons, made up of the governor, attorney general, and Minnesota Supreme Court Chief Justice, has the final say.
Since the August 1st hearing, I received a letter follow-up from the Clemency Review Commission pretty much saying that our work is done and that I'm moving on to the next phase.
Jason was convicted three times between 1997 and 2005, one for possession of a firearm and two for possession of a controlled substance. Since then, he's completed his prison sentence and probation. He hoped that his case would be on the docket for September's Board of Pardons meeting. It was not.
This stuff is so ambiguous. I'm just trying to share along the way.
We don't notify if they won't be heard at a particular meeting.
Carly Stark is the executive director of the Clemency Review Commission, the nine-member group that reviews Minnesotans' applications for either a pardon of a past criminal conviction or a commutation, a lessening of some part of someone's current sentence. Their recommendations are sent to the Board of Pardons.
When we receive an application, we immediately send an acknowledgement letter to applicants in the mail. Initially, we were scheduling about 6 months out. Now, from the time someone submits an application to when they receive a hearing, it's about 12 to 18 months because of the large increase in applications. We've gotten that feedback. It would be helpful, even if it's not a certain date, to get an estimate.
Just 2 weeks before the December 17th Board of Pardons meeting, Jason got an email from Stark saying that the Board of Pardons was no longer requesting a second hearing on his case and that his testimony and attendance wouldn't be needed at their December meeting.
The board will let us know which applications they want to hear again. We don't know the reasons why the board does or does not request a hearing.
The structure of some of this needs to be totally changed.
For one, Jason says he'd like to see more support for clemency applicants and any victims of their past crimes.
If you're going to reach out to somebody and say, the person who caused your family harm is possibly coming home, you need to do your work on the front end to prepare them.
So the CRC provides victim services through a contract with the Minnesota Alliance on Crime.
These victim services for all of Minnesota's cases are provided by one staff person. In 2024, the Board of Pardons received 279 applications, heard under a third of those, and granted clemency to 64 people.
I'm preparing for the worst, but at the same time, I'm optimistic that the pardon will happen.
For North Star Stories, I'm Emily Krumberger.
You are listening to North Star Stories. The incredibly popular Eagle Cam is back online. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources turned the EagleCam back on earlier this month. The camera allows viewers to watch the breeding behaviors of bald eagles. The agency has been providing the service since 2013. The DNR made some improvements this year, which should provide better images. Viewers who check out the Eagle Cam this month will see a pair courting and upgrading the nest. You can watch the eagles on the DNR website and the DNR YouTube channel.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
The latest on the criminal case against former state senator Justin Eichhorn. Then, why Target is facing even more backlash in its hometown. And the proposed data center for Hermantown clears another hurdle. I'm Gracie J. A federal judge has ruled against former state senator Justin Eichhorn, who asked that his indictment be dismissed on the grounds of selective prosecution. Eichhorn claimed he's facing harsher charges because he was an elected official at the time of his arrest. He also made a motion to suppress evidence he claimed was unlawfully seized. Amper's member station, KAXE, reports that the judge rejected most of Eichhorn's motions, but did not grant one requesting the government provide the true age of the undercover officer who posed for the photo to which he responded. The court has not set a trial date for the former senator. Up next, civil rights groups are demanding Target Corporation ban federal agents from using its store's parking lots. As Ann Holston explains, the demands come after community leaders say Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents used a Target parking lot in Minneapolis to prepare before moving into the community to make arrests.
Ban ICE! Ban ICE! Ban ICE!
On a bitterly cold afternoon, about 100 people gathered at Minneapolis's East Lake Street Target parking lot to call out the company they say continues to fail their community.
We're standing here outside of Target asking that they speak out with us and take action against ICE strike raids and attacks on our communities.
Luis Argueta is an organizer with Unidos Minnesota, one of the groups leading the push. Their demand is straightforward.
We are calling on Target to adopt a clear, public, unwavering policy that says no ICE staging.
That's right.
The day before, residents documented Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, setting up at Target's East Lake Street and Richfield locations. The ramped-up operations follow President Trump's threats to end temporary protected status for Somali American families. He also called Somali people garbage, rhetoric community leaders says has fueled fear and anger. Argueta says it's time for Target to stand up to the president.
You cannot sell joy while hosting fear.
No!
You cannot market belonging while providing cover for intimidation.
No!
You cannot celebrate our communities on your commercials while letting ICE stalk them in your parking lots.
Organizers say Target has long benefited from immigrant workers and shoppers, and that staying quiet while federal agents use its property sends the opposite message. In an email to North Star Stories, Target said it doesn't have any cooperative agreement with ICE, but did not say whether it will intervene if agents use its parking lots. Civil rights attorney Nakima Levy Armstrong told the crowd Target's corporate silence is part of a wider pattern.
We saw the handwriting on the wall when Target made its decision to roll back its focus on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Last January, Target pulled its DEI programs under pressure from the incoming Trump administration, prompting nationwide boycotts. It also contributed $1 million to Trump's inauguration fund, something the retailer had never done before for any president.
We have to continue to hold Target Corporation and other companies accountable who choose profits over people,
yeah,
who choose tyranny and authoritarianism over justice and equality.
In Minneapolis, the city government has become more outspoken. Police Chief Brian O'Hara said if Minneapolis police see violations of human or civil rights by ICE agents,
they absolutely have a duty to intervene as police officers.
And earlier this month, Mayor Jacob Pry issued an executive order barring ICE from setting up in any city-owned parking lots, ramps, or garages. Unidos Minnesota organizer Kathy Quick called that a positive step for the city and hopes to see private businesses like Target follow suit.
We know that we can no longer wait it out to see what will happen or keep our heads down so that our cities won't become a target. We are a target. It is too late to avoid trouble. The trouble is here.
For North Star Stories, I'm Zan Holston.
You are listening to North Star Stories. Well, the city of Hermantown says it will not conduct additional environmental reviews of a proposed data center. A group of residents referring to itself as Stop the Hermantown Data Center submitted a petition for an environmental assessment to the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board earlier this year. The agency forwarded the request back to the city, which then denied the request. Residents opposing the data center say they will work with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy to use courts to try and keep the data center out of their community.
North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
Welcome to Minnesota Native News. I'm Murray Rock. This week, how community members involved in the annual ceremony remembering the Dakota men hung by the United States government in 1862 in Mankato will now honor the Dakota women present too. Plus, a look at the first Ojibwe broadcast of a hockey game in the country, here in Minnesota. First, Chaz Wagner hears from Gabrielle Strong about how her research of the women present at this painful historical event will be incorporated at this year's commemoration.
It was a cold, wintry day on December 26, 1862, when 38 Dakota men were hung in Mankato, making it the largest mass execution in United States history. While indigenous communities and some non-native people have remembered and paid respects to these men, newer attention is now being given to the women present at this painful event.
Oftentimes, we have heard about the experience of the men and the horror that they faced and that they suffered. And we are now learning of the horrible conditions of our grandmothers.
Gabrielle Strong is a Sisseton Wahpeton Dakota citizen and vice president of Indian Collective.
They walked from this area, the Lower Sioux, to Mankato. Beside those wagons, they were marched. They were there on the day of the hanging.
Dakota people were upset over their treaties not being upheld, ultimately leading to the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862.
And annuities that were promised not being received, and so the people were really suffering at that time.
The aftermath was a series of military trials with 392 men convicted and 303 sentenced to death. That number was later reduced to 38 by President Abraham Lincoln.
The hanging, which occurred the day after Christmas, and why it took place at that time during this season of peace, was because it was meant to be a gift. The way in which our people have commemorated what happened has taken many forms, and maybe the most known is the Dakota 38 Ride. We've always known their names of the 38. We read them every year.
This year in remembrance will be a reading of the women involved.
Our oral history shared the women wept and wailed at the gallows. There was 17 of them. And they were brought to serve, to help care for the prisoners. I always wanted to find the names of those women. I wanted to know more about their experience. This year, our prayers were answered. They showed us how to find them. We're going to read their names this year.
The Dakota 38 run and the reading of the names will take place at the Land of Memories Park in Mankato on the remembrance date of December 26th, starting at 10 a.m. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Chaz Wagner.
Next, the country's first broadcast of a hockey game in Ojibwe happened in Minnesota last month. Chaz Wagner has more.
The Minnesota Wild made history by broadcasting a National Hockey League game entirely in Anishinaabemowin, the Ojibwe language, on Native American Heritage Day. The Wild faced off against the Colorado Avalanche at the newly renamed Grand Casino Arena, formerly the XL Energy Center.
I said monolingual Ojibwe commentary for every live game, and about a month later, I got an email from the Wild.
That's Babituigijigukwe, Melissa Boyd, Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe citizen and board treasurer of the Midwest Indigenous Immersion Network. She says that Minnesota Wild owner Craig Leipold was supportive of the idea.
I helped coordinate the commentators and bringing on the people that would do good to hockey and do good by the language with their skill set.
Special guest Ojibwe commentators are fluent language speakers Gordon Jourdain, Chato Gonzalez, and James Buchholz. The game was broadcast entirely in Ojibwe, where participating fans could listen live on the FanDuel Sports Network app or website. Minnesota took the win that night with a 3-2 final score. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Chaz Wagner.
Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
Programming on KFAI is sponsored by Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties Energy Assistance Program. The Energy Assistance Program helps low-income households pay a portion of their energy bills. You only need 1 month of income verification and a copy of your energy bill when you submit.